Live and Lansing with Michael Cohen. This is More Compelling Talk Radio, 1320 WILS.
We are back. Michael Cohen with producer James Plady. Thank you for joining us tonight. Well, 1 in 8 Americans, including children and even toddlers, are now taking psychotropic medication. If you're not taking them, then chances are you know someone who is. But are these drugs helping resolve our mental illnesses or making things worse? Someone that's taken a close look at this issue is journalist Robert Whitaker. He's the author of the new book, Anatomy of an Epidemic, Magic Bullets, Psychiatric Drugs, and the Astonishing Rise of Mental Illness in America. Bob, thank you very much for joining us tonight.
Oh, thank you very much for having me. It's a pleasure being here.
So an astonishing rise of mental illness in America, and I guess an astonishing rise of the use of these drugs. Does that not confirm, though, that they are indeed very effective for many Americans?
Well, you know, one of the first things I just look at in this book is, so we have really embraced the use of psychiatric drugs in the past 25 years. Societal spending on psychiatric drugs has climbed from around $800 million in 1987 to more than $40 billion today. So it's an extraordinary increase. And as that has happened, the number of adults on disability, in other words, they get a government payment, due to mental illness has climbed from 1.25 million adults to more than 4.5 million adults. So we need to ask ourselves as a society, is why, as we use these drugs more, are we seeing an increasing burden of mental illness in our society? And that's the puzzle I set out to investigate in this book. And what you find when you look at the science, and this is a very science-heavy book, is when we do trials to assess the merits of these drugs, generally they do beat placebo over the short term. In other words, an antidepressant knocks down the symptoms of depression better than placebo over a six-week period and so forth. But what I do in this book, and I think it's really what is novel, is try to look at, well, how do medications shape the long-term course of depression, or shape the long-term course of a bipolar disorder, of anxiety, or of ADHD. And when you look through the medications and this paradigm of care through that prism, you find a very different story. Mm. And what you find is science telling us that in many instances, it's clear that this paradigm of care is worsening the long-term course.
Well, isn't part of the issue with these medications is that once people begin to take them, they often don't stop?
Yeah, this is, I think, something that we really do need to know. So you go on a psychiatric medication, and, you know, they affect neurotransmitters, and basically they modify your brain. Your brain adapts to the presence of the drug. And once that happens, it can be very difficult to get off the drug. You can have withdrawal symptoms, et cetera. And yet, when you stay on the drugs beyond 6 weeks, 6 months, a year, et cetera, you know, you'll start to see a lot of problems crop up with long-term use. So that's the way in which the drugs may act sort of as a trap over the long term.
When you say problems, I mean, we certainly have children that have grown up taking Ritalin, things like that. I mean, is there anything that's been discovered that's particularly harmful about that?
Okay, so let's talk about Ritalin, you know, because many, many children are on Ritalin. Well, in the 1990s, the NIMH, that's the National Institute of Mental Health, it's a federal agency, decided to conduct a long-term study of stimulants for treating ADHD. And the hope was, of course, is that they would find that the drugs help the kids grow up and thrive, right? And they would do better in school, they'd have lower delinquency rates and so forth. And what they found is that the drugs did indeed help for the first 12 months. Those kids did better. But by the end of 3 years, the NIMH found that being on a stimulant was a marker not of benefit, but of deterioration. And by the end of 6 years, you actually found that the medicated kids had worse ADHD symptoms, higher delinquency rates, some signs of functional impairment, et cetera. And so as the lead investigator said, we had expected that the medicated kids would do better, but we found no benefit, not on any domain of functioning, and that should be made very clear to parents. But that's a message that is never heard. And what you see, what is a risk with the use of stimulants? Well, there are many risks. But one of the biggest risks is that the child, in fact, will convert to bipolar disorder. Stimulants can cause sort of psychotic symptoms. They can cause manic symptoms. They can cause sort of a daily rise and fall in moods. And somewhere between 10 and 25% of youth on stimulants long-term now convert to bipolar. And when they make that conversion, now they're seeing as having a chronic, sort of serious, lifelong disease. And so that's a real risk. And when you don't find studies saying that you're improving long-term outcomes, you want to ask, is that a risk worth taking?
I'm talking to Robert Whitaker. He's the author of the new book, Anatomy of an Epidemic, Magic Bullets, Psychiatric Drugs, and the Astonishing Rise of Mental Illness in America. So is it known how often people do decide to stop taking these medications and what that process is like?
No, this isn't nearly as well studied as you would like. You hear different rates in terms of how often people do try to stop taking the medications for different classes of drugs. So I think a high percentage of people try an antidepressant will stop. Many people going on antipsychotics will take them for a while and try to stop. People on benzodiazepines often try to stop and can't. And what is really missing from the literature is any sort of studies about how to get off successfully. In other words, what sort of tapering protocol should you use? When should you try to taper off? And just how can you do this well? It's just missing from the medical literature. And what's also missing, there is a lot of science telling us how the drugs, going on a drug changes the brain. In other words, how the brain responds to the drug. What we have is a total absence of, once your brain is changed, and let's say then you go off, does your brain then change back and go back to normal? Does it renormalize, so to speak? We just don't have studies even telling us that.
Well, but the theory or the understanding is that the way the brain is operating before you take the medication, the reason you're taking an antidepressant is because you have a malfunction or an imbalance in your brain chemistry. Is that not your understanding of what really is happening there?
Oh, yeah, that's just not true. I mean, so let's say we've heard about that depression is due to low serotonin. That's one of the things I investigate in the book, is where did that hypothesis arise from? You find that it arose from an understanding of how drug acts on the brain. So the drug, in some ways, lifts serotonergic levels in the brain, at least for a period of time. So the thought was, well, maybe people with depression have low serotonin. Well, they began investigating that in the 1970s, and as early as 1983, the NIMH was concluding it just doesn't seem that there is a problem with the serotonergic system. Now, we did 20 more years of research on that. We never found that there, in fact, that people with depression, as a matter of course, had low serotonin. And I think it was just on NPR recently brought in a bunch of psychiatrists well-known in the field, and they asked them about this low serotonin theory. And one psychiatrist after another said, oh, listen, that's an outdated model. We just didn't find that to be so. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, that hasn't been communicated to the public.
What about the patients themselves? I mean, this is not being forced upon them. They're going to the doctor's office. They're telling the doctor, you know, I'm depressed, I'm anxious. They're given medication. They feel it helps them, and they continue taking it. Does that not confirm on some level that at least the patients themselves feel that this stuff is effective even in the long term?
Well, listen, there are some, first of all, there's many people who respond to antidepressants and find them helpful. That's absolutely true over the short term. There are some good responders to antidepressants as well. What you really find, though, in science is this story. Is, let's say we look at what is the natural course of depression in, they say, the pre-antidepressant era. And what you find is that depression was basically an episodic illness for most people. A depressive episode might run 3 months, 6 months, 9 months. People would get better, and often then they would stay better for, you know, the rest of their lives. And so the first use of antidepressants was, well, people are going to get better, but maybe we can help them get better faster. So anyway, when a society tries to assess whether a drug is really helping the society as a whole, it has to look at, well, are we improving the long-term course? In other words, do people stay well longer on the antidepressants? Or, in fact, do they stay well better if they get off the drugs or are never exposed? And what you find in modern studies is the non-medicated group, long-term, does better overall. Now, that doesn't mean nobody is doing well on the drugs. It just means that, on the whole, you see better outcomes, more, less depression, better functioning in the non-medicated groups.
Well, the pharmaceutical industry certainly has a reason to avoid this kind of information or perspective, but are psychiatrists aware of this? Do they agree with your conclusions?
You know, increasingly I'm being asked now to give grand rounds at academic medical centers, two psychiatry departments, And the reason I'm being asked is because the literature that I put together, the sort of story of science I put together in Anatomy of an Epidemic, is built from mainstream studies done by the NIMH or other foreign governments. And the tragedy is, because of the financial influences that you've spoken about, with many academic psychiatrists working as sort of consultants and speakers, as advisors to pharmaceutical companies, these long-term results just don't get publicized. So remarkably, even within medical circles, many of these studies are unknown or not well known by the psychiatrists themselves.
Robert Whitaker, author of the new book, Anatomy of an Epidemic, Magic Bullets, Psychiatric Drugs, and the Astonishing Rise of Mental Illness in America. Check it out if you want to find out more. Bob, thank you very much for joining us tonight.
Thank you very much for having me. It's been a pleasure.